Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in the sight of the Lord. The parable of the Good Samaritan is probably one of the most widely recognized parables, even if only by name. Calling someone a Good Samaritan is a common shorthand for saying that they have gone out of their way to do a good deed, to help a stranger, to make someone's life just that little bit easier with no expectation of reward. That much is understood, even for those who, when they stop to think about it, aren't actually familiar with the content of the parable. As for those of us who are familiar with how the priest and the Levite refused to help the victim of banditry, but the Samaritan was the one to help, we've probably heard a specific interpretation of this parable. That the power of this parable came from the shock of the audience that while the paragons of Israelite identity, the priest and the Levite, ignored the wounded man, it was the hated mixed heritage Samaritan who stopped to help. Under this interpretation, the parable becomes a way of shaming the Jewish lawyer into doing the right thing. If a Samaritan of all people can act with compassion, then you, a Jew, have no excuse. What if I told you that the Samaritan isn't some hated other, and that the priest and the Levite are themselves complicated and contentious characters? As Dr. Matthew Chalmers says, the taxonomy of difference in Luke 10, that is to say, the way these characters are talked about and named, confirms that we are dealing with an intra-Israelite matter, rather than the binary of Jew and non-Jew. The parable contrasts the Samaritan with two others, a Levite and a priest. It also identifies the individual set upon by bandits not as explicitly Jewish, but simply as some man. Further, the idea that the intended Jewish audience for this parable would be shocked at the idea that a Samaritan could be good would require them to think of Israelite identity along the same kind of ethnic and racial lines popular with scholars in the 19th and 20th century. One such scholar being Joachim Jeremias, a man with Nazi ties, whose book Jerusalem in the Time of Jesus provides a race scientific taxonomy of difference from Jews organized in terms of Jewish hatred, from Israelites of pure ancestry to Samaritans and women. So you can see how this idea of Samaritans as a universally hated other by the Jews of Jesus' day starts to lose water. This is not to say that everyone who has taught this parable with this interpretation is secretly a Nazi. Jeremias and his colleagues were very influential in their field of biblical scholarship, their ideas being passed down and repeated by trusted authorities on the subject. And it does give us an easy, plausible way to think about the conflict of this parable. I've even seen this interpretation frequently used to teach an anti-racist lesson, admonishing modern listeners not to make assumptions about someone's goodness based on their origins or their religion. I've thought about it that way myself in the past. But when we focus on the identity of the Samaritan as an enemy to Jews, we miss out on the deeper lesson of this parable, which is how we, as people of God, are called to treat each other. With this in mind, I've rewritten this parable into a modern context. One night, someone was walking along McLeod Trail down by Fish Creek Park, when he was struck by a hit and run and left half dead at the side of the road. A Catholic priest was driving along and, when he noticed the person lying at the side of the road, he turned up the radio and kept driving. Likewise, an independent fundamentalist Baptist was driving along and, when he noticed the person laying at the side of the road, turned up his worship podcast and kept driving. But a Jehovah's Witness, who was in town for a convention, was driving along, and when he saw the person lying on the side of the road, He was moved with compassion. He pulled over and performed first aid while he called for an ambulance. He went with the victim to the hospital and advocated for him, and when he was discharged, the Jehovah's Witness arranged home care for him while he recovered, paying for whatever fees weren't covered by Alberta Health. Which of these three was a neighbor to the hit-and-run victim? Just as the Jews of Jesus' day argued over priestly and Levite lineage and whether a Samaritan Israelite's worship at Mount Gerizim was as valid as any other Israelite's worship at the Jerusalem Temple, we might debate the necessity of Catholic priesthood's apostolic succession when we are called to be a priesthood of all believers. Distance ourselves from fundamentalist talking points and question the ways that Jehovah's Witnesses interpret scripture. But all three groups are part of the conversation of Christian identity, right alongside us Mennonites. And just like in the original parable, the one who follows proper Christian ethics is not the one with the strongest claim of continuity, nor the one with the best interpretation of scripture, but the one who loves his neighbor by providing aid. This, then, allows us to focus on the actual bulk of the parable, the lengths to which the Samaritan went to help a stranger. He didn't seek out the nearest physician and leave the man there to be taken care of, and he didn't just ask around for the man's relatives so that they could take responsibility for his well-being. From the moment he saw the man, he took it upon himself to give medical care and to bring the man somewhere safe at his own expense. This was more than just an exercise in effort. This was also an exercise in trust. Travelers at that time would be justifiably hesitant to approach someone wounded at the side of the road. It could be that the victim was not actually wounded, but acting as a decoy for an ambush, or else if the injuries were genuine, the bandits could still be nearby, ready to strike again. Even just going up to him was a risk. And when the Samaritan brought the man to an inn, the level of trust on display only increased. Not only would the Samaritan, and by extension, the victim of banditry, have to trust the innkeeper to provide shelter and continue to take care of the man, but the innkeeper would have to trust that it was safe for him to take in this beaten and bloody stranger, and that the Samaritan was as good as his word when he said he would be back and would reimburse any extra expense. Having worked front desk at a motel, I have a good sense of how much risk it would be to take in a guest who had clearly been so recently attacked. And unlike the innkeeper in this parable, I didn't live at the motel. My personal risk in this situation was much lower. But then, so was my personal responsibility. The Samaritan treated this man as a neighbor and showed him his love for him by taking an active role in his well-being. He also treated the innkeeper as a neighbor by trusting him to help bear that responsibility, even if money did change hands. And this was also neighborly love, ensuring as best he could that the innkeeper would have the resources to do what was asked of him. This is the sort of thing that happens when we engage with each other as a community of neighbors, rather than discrete pockets of individuals too busy or too afraid to reach out. As a community of neighbors, we are able to reach out, giving help as we see the need, and leaning on each other in the process. And the more we practice this, the more broadly we are able to spread this neighborly love of God, the neighborly love God asks of us. And this is the power of the parable of the Good Samaritan. As Chalmers puts it, rather than a Jew snidely humiliated by the example of a Samaritan, as in numerous scholarly interpretations, the lawyer is an Israelite told to go and do the same, to participate, in other words, in a renewed vision of communal Israelite obligation. This is not a story about shaming a member of the dominant culture through the good example of a hated other, but a call to action, a call to compassion, a call to love our neighbors. So while we go out and enjoy the company of our neighbors during our fall fair today, let us look upon them with love and remember that love when, in the course of our daily lives, we come across a neighbor in need. Thanks be to God.